You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour, this hour on Mondays by my co-host on Mondays, Matt Rothschild. He hosts the fabulous podcast, Wisconsin Forward. You can find that everywhere you find your pods, as well as on civicmedia.us. Thank you all for joining me. The question that we're teeing up, for as long as it takes for us all to get through it, is a question that I'm going to just say thanks to our last guest, Jordana Green, co-host of the Adam and Jordana Show at WCCO AM Radio 4. Jordana posited this: are Democrats as equally responsible for the ratcheting up of political rhetoric? Some may say yes. My suggestion, I think the quandary, the dilemma that we find ourselves in, is that Donald Trump's history is simply unmatched when it comes to embracing politically violent rhetoric, and that has been the ratcheting up, and that Democrats or liberals or even a good faith Republican who wishes to criticize the president is then met with all sorts of attacks. And we have to respond, describe what this administration, what Donald Trump is proposing to do, proposing and in fact doing in many instances, specifically and perhaps most importantly in this moment, the deployment of National Guard and active duty Marines to face off against U.S. citizens, potentially in violation of federal law, as at least one judge has held and as an appeals court is currently considering. What do you think? Do Democrats bear equal responsibility for ratcheting up the rhetoric to get us to this place of again, extremist political dialogue where someone like Mr. Belter takes a gun in his own hands and decides to confront the opposition not with words or votes, but with violence? 855-752-4842. Matt, I wanted to first get your reactions to the question posed by Jordana, which is, do we look at Democrats and say, you're just as responsible, or maybe 10%? Like, can you apportion responsibility for where we are in this rhetorical moment?
No, I don't think we're all equally to blame. So I tried to figure out what she was trying to say there. I think I agree with it. It'd be good if we, you know, had civic and civil dialogue. That's what we're about here at Civic Media, and that's important. But that doesn't mean we should ignore what we're facing here with the Trump administration, which is what the point you were getting to right at the end, because we are looking at an administration, and I never used the F word until Donald Trump came along in public, but he has these fascist elements to him. That's the nearest thing in history that we have to compare Donald Trump with. So I don't think saying that or things like authoritarianism and applying those to the Trump administration are leading people to pick up guns and shooting people. I reject that. And I've been spending a lot of time listening to scholars of fascism and authoritarianism, Timothy Snyder, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, I was listening to today.
She literally wrote the book on the historical patterns to fascism and authoritarianism.
Right, the book's called Strong Men, and it's haunting.
Yes.
I have it on my shelf. And I did look at this article in The Atlantic today by Brian Klass, who's also an academic, and he said this: the difference is that only one party is led by someone who uses his megaphone to routinely normalize and absolve acts of political violence. And it's interesting that Trump today or yesterday was tweeting about radical left Democrats who are sick of mind and hate our country and actually want to destroy our inner cities. This is a direct quote from the President of the United States this weekend or today. And so he is demonizing, really demonizing Democrats. And it's appalling that he's doing it the day after the speaker in Minnesota was shot dead.
He's also repeatedly called Democrats of all varieties, both centrists, both those that are center-right and far-left progressives, evil. He's used that specifically and personally. To me, there is a vast difference between calling what someone does evil and actually assigning that characteristic, attributing to them as their whole personage. We want to hear from you. 855-752-4842. Lots of reactions. Cam from Appleton on the text line saying calling something what it is just plainly is not the wrong thing to do. It is wrong to say that Democrats bear responsibility here. Al from Brown County, this is not true. This is not both sides. You can't both sides this. Annie from Watertown on the text lines. What are we talking about? It is Gestapo acts, Annie says. It is brown shirts. We are not all complicit in this. Annie is livid. Donna from DeForest saying, Jordana's saying that Waltz was wrong in describing Donald Trump's tactics as being hate mongers, as being unconstitutional policy is infuriating. I cannot listen to both sides baloney. That's virtue signaling BS. Donald also asking for some clarity on the fact that many on the right are claiming that the shooter was somehow like friendly with the governor, had some relationship with the governor. There is absolutely no indication of that. The governor appointed him to a nonpartisan workforce development commissioner. The shooter did at some point own two businesses, as is, and perhaps we can ask our colleagues from Minnesota to confirm this, but as I understand this and from the reporting that I've read over the weekend, it is very traditional for a governor in Minnesota to seek out people from the opposing party for these sorts of appointments to things that are, again, explicitly supposed to be nonpartisan or bipartisan, like this Workforce Development Board. His tenure on that board ended at least 2 years ago by the reporting I read. There's no personal relationship between the governor and the shooter, just to dispel that bit of misinformation that has been floating out there. Robert from West Allis is also pretty ticked off, saying Fox News broadcasting lies and garbage during and after COVID and the big lie, they're responsible for leading to these deaths. Again, Derek Van Orten basically doubling down on all of that vitriol and hate, posting on X over the weekend. A whole pack of election deniers got together and spewed hate. One of them decided to murder and attempt to murder some politicians that were not far left enough for them. Tim Walz is stupid and a clown. That simply all of the predicate for that from Congressman Van Orten is false. It is not accurate. We need to be clear about that, folks. We're going to the phones shortly. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Robert from McFarland on the text line. I don't think Dems are ramping it up, but I don't think that they're doing enough to tone it down. Ah, now that's an interesting question. I appreciate this, Robert from McFarland. To observe where we are as a moment and then to say perhaps we all have collective responsibility, that it is not borne by one politician, one party, but by all of us to try to ratchet the temperature down. Jane from Madison, demonic is a term frequently engaged and used on the right and not on the left. It engages and incentivizes a violent response. Kathleen from Libertyville, watching some of these hearings and the questions coming from Nancy Grace and Marjorie Taylor Greene, that's what is ratcheting things up. Wow. When these folks, again, from Kathleen from Libertyville, these people can't even state clearly that they'll follow the Constitution if given an unconstitutional order. Steve from Milwaukee, with all of this political violence and lies, how is Fox News getting the highest ratings still? Makes me sick. Jane from Madison, American ideals to cling to. Fight it at the ballot box or in the courts. Otherwise, innocent until proven guilty for everybody. Absolutely. Steve from Milwaukee also saying this. I had on Fox Live when they first reported on this, and they tried to paint it as a Democrat shooting a Republican. Wow. Wow.
And I think
And Donna from DeForest, just clarifying this, the shooter was originally appointed by the previous governor in 2016 before Walz was even in office.
And the thing is, it's really important to stress, as you did at the very top of the show, Maggie, that violence is never the answer. Governor Walz said the same thing. And what I like that Jordana did say was that, you know, let's respond with some basic common decency here, unlike Van Orden or Mike Lee or Scott Walker. Let's give sympathy to the family or in both families that had been attacked. And let's just show some basic, you know, emotional intelligence here and not just leap into some scurrilous political attack as they did, which was just so inappropriate.
855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Cam, go ahead. You're next. Cam from Appleton, are you there? Welcome back to Cam. L.A., Tom, hello. Welcome back to the show. What do you have to say this afternoon? Say hi to Matt.
Hey, Maggie. Hey, Matt. First, hey, we the people ultimately are the government, and we showed that from the No Kings rallies. So let's definitely give ourselves a pat on the back for that one, as well as showing our civic duty to get out and protest. This MAGA murderer does not get to have the moniker of pro-life. And I'm sick of the media falling into this thing by saying, oh, he was a pro-lifer. No. He was either pro-birther or he was pro-big government's right to choose. There's a big difference. And I'm sick of people throwing this moniker around when I actually am a pro-life person, because I don't believe in wars. I don't believe in killing of any kind. They cannot say that on the other side. Do not call this guy pro-life, because he's not. He is pro-death, just like the Republican Party. And I say that not in hyperbole. I say that as someone that looks at the policies of each party, and you tell me who is more pro-death. They are, if you want to call them anything, pro-birth or pro-big government's right to choose. Just because a woman has the right to choose doesn't mean she's going to choose to terminate a pregnancy. I'm sick of this pro-abortion crap that I hear from our side, and I'm sick of the regular media calling, oh, he was a pro-lifer. BS. And I just want to get that out there very, very strongly, because that's crazy. Also, this weekend I watched the brainwashing of my dad again. Everyone needs to watch that and find out what side of the aisle has been spewing lies and hatred for the past 40 to 50 years.
Thanks so much. That's Tom from LA. He's referring to a documentary called The Brainwashing of My Father. It is gripping viewing, I believe, streaming presently on Netflix. We're going to go back to the phones when we return. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Are Dems also to blame for the political violence? What do you say? 855-75-CIVIC. My name is Maggie Dawn. I got Matt Rothschild with me, and each and every one of you. We're all about real news and great discussion here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a fine guest co-host with me, as I do every Monday. His name's Matt Rothschild. Find his great work on the podcast, Wisconsin Forward. You can find that at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. You can subscribe wherever you find your favorite podcast. We're debating this question. Are Democrats responsible for where we now are in terms of political violence in this country? What do you think comes next? How do we ratchet it down? Because I don't know about you. I've been in a boxing ring. When I'm getting punched in the face and the gut and the kidneys, I tend to want to punch back. And I legitimately, to each and every one of you, and Matt, I want to get your reactions. We're going to go back to the phones. I am fully in struggle mode in this moment, because what I see from Donald Trump and his sort of MAGA regime, those who excuse make and deny the truth, has all of the hallmarks of authoritarianism. It is per a federal court judge's words earlier today, fundamentally racist policies, genderist policies, xenophobic policies, anti-homophobic policies. It's again and again and again. So how do we combat, if I can't call it out and say that's what this is, and if I am, if we are being held to some different standard of language and political expression than our opponents, are we walking into a boxing ring with both hands tied behind our back? I'm struggling with, if we're supposed to be able to transcend this moment to try to bring people together, I don't want to come together with a government that is going to target grant programs because they're helping understand health disparities between Black and white folks. I don't want to find communion or togetherness with folks who want to defund health grants because they may benefit the LGBTQ community. That is not an okay set of circumstances. And I know there's more nuance here, but I think a lot of that gets lost a bit. How do I have a nuanced argument with somebody who's trying to knock me out? Right? Like, I feel like, oh, let me talk to you about the policy details over here and how we can do better. And at the same time, I'm getting beaten about the head, neck, and shoulders with kidney shots coming in. That's kind of where I'm at. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Matt?
Yeah, we got to call it as we see it. And Trump is an authoritarian. Ask any scholar of fascism or authoritarianism. He's an ultra-nationalist. He's an expansionist. That's why he wants Greenland. He's a racist. He's a scapegoater. He's a hyper-masculine blamer of anyone who's not, you know, a heterosexual male. I mean, this is all, and he's got a cult following. He's got a mass base. These are all factors, elemental factors of a fascist or an authoritarian. He has no respect for democracy or liberalism. He castigates anyone who's liberal or left-wing. That's why he's brought back a term from the 1950s calling people communists. I mean, it's every element. And so, you know, we don't want to incite violence. We never incite violence. We say violence is not the answer. That's why these protests were so great over the weekend. But we can't deny what's looking at us straight in the face, which is an authoritarian movement led by an authoritarian cult figure and the dangers that that poses. And we've got to explain it to everybody that we can, because otherwise we're going to lose this democracy.
Folks, that's Matt Rothschild. We're going to go to the phones in just a moment here. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Donald Trump, throughout the 2016 election and the 2024 election cycle, as well as 2020, repeatedly called for his supporters at rallies to beat the crap out of hecklers. He encouraged people to turn and jeer and beat the crap out of the media, the evil media. And he offered to cover their legal bills if they knocked the crap out of them. He floated the ideas of shooting looters, shooting shoplifters, shooting migrants crossing the border. He's constantly targeted the press, often sharing on both X and Truth Social violent memes involving specific outlets. His freaking FBI Director Cash Patel has done the same. He endorsed Greg Gianforte, now the governor of Montana, specifically because Mr. Gianforte violently attacked a reporter, saying this, quote, "Any guy that can do a body slam, he's my type." His speech on the National Mall on January 6th put a match on a pool, an Olympic-sized swimming pool of gasoline that it resulted in police officers dying because of the acts of rioters who stopped the peaceful transition of power. He calls political opponents evil and human scum. He suggested in 2016 that there was maybe something that, quote, Second Amendment people, end quote, could do to deal with Hillary Clinton. In 2022, when a QAnon disciple who had peddled Trump's lies about the 2020 election attempted to assassinate then Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and fractured the skull of her husband Paul with a hammer, Trump, of course, made light of the incident. His son posted an Instagram photo of himself and a hammer and a pair of underwear like the ones Paul Pelosi had been wearing and said, got my Paul Pelosi Halloween costume ready. 2023, Trump openly wondered if Mark Milley, then chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, should be killed. He's repeatedly calling has repeatedly called those who politically oppose him treasonous and talked about how they dealt with treasonous people in the past. He's talked about Liz Cheney before a firing squad. I ask you, calling someone a fascist or even a jackbooted thug or even a Nazi, if you genuinely and in good faith believe that they are engaging in the tactics that historically have been proven to be the tactics of fascists and authoritarianists, is that really equivalent? Your calls are next, 855-752-4842. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody's talking about lowering the temperature, tuning down the rhetoric. We've been having a debate about whether or not both sides bear equal responsibility or perhaps even disproportionate levels of responsibility for the political violence that occurred over the weekend. I don't think so. I just don't. The vast majority of political violence and assassinations that have been successful in this country has been directed at progressives and Democrats. And yes, I remember the attempted assassination attempt on President Reagan, right? Yes, I recall what happened with President Trump this past summer. I condemned it. I condemn the violence this past weekend, but I just don't think the historical record supports any kind of statement that Dems and Republicans are both equally responsible for this place that we find ourselves at. If we can think of ratcheted up political engagement on a spectrum, right? And on one end of the spectrum, it is totally disengaged. I never read any news, don't care anything about it, and I don't vote. And on the other end of the spectrum is I buy a gun and I go impersonate a cop and kill people, right? The range of what is acceptable in our country has moved closer and closer and faster towards that extreme end of political violence because of Donald Trump, in my opinion, not because of Democrats. And I think that that matters. Now, individual bad actors will do bad things. Certainly the assassin, I'm sure it's going to come out that he's had mental health issues. But when you speak in the language that Donald Trump does, for the amount of time that he has at the rhetoric level that he has, you cannot then act as if you are surprised when one of the hundreds of millions of people in this country that, yes, may have had pre-existing mental health conditions, takes your rhetoric at face value and acts upon it. I simply have not seen equivalent rhetoric from the left. Matt, then we're going to go to the phones and the text lines. 855-752-4842. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's no equivalent rhetoric, really. And one of our texters had mentioned the pardoning of the January 6th protesters, and I was reminded of that because this morning I heard Ruth Ben-Ghiat, the NYU scholar and author of Authoritarianism, said that the pardoning of the January 6th protesters gave a huge green light that political violence from the right is okay. And I think we need to understand the language that Donald Trump has been using. You read the whole list, yeah, Maggie, of what he's been saying. And then he said something just in the last 36 hours, blaming radical left Democrats and calling them enemies and all this other stuff. You know, this is the language of an authoritarian, and it does give the green light to people who may not be mentally totally, you know, plumb to go do horrible things. And that's the rhetoric that's really dangerous right now.
Yeah, very shocking. Eric from Lodi says this, both sideism and whataboutism doesn't tone down anything. It hides behind a fake veneer of respectability. Being angry and outraged over people of color being renditioned by masked squads of law enforcement or thugs and calling them out is not escalation. It's an appropriate freaking response. Mary from Tulsa texting in on the AUK line. The national organization BraveAngels.org, with chapters in many states, exists to help both sides find common ground and learn civil dialogue skills. Wonderful. Luke from the south side of Chicago texting in on the AUK line. Fox reporting that a Dem assassinated a Republican before having any details is strategic. They enter the rumor into the public mindset, into the information environment, and that is enough. Then the narrative, the lie, the thing that wasn't true takes hold. People believe it. Nothing can move them off of them. That's how the escalation occurs, with lies that are intended to provoke, and they are repeated ad nauseum. Gotta agree with that one. Scott Kuchka from Shorewood reminding us, of course, that the way that we move forward is to keep the pressure on full fold with peaceful protests and showing up at the ballot box. Folks reminding us of all of those who have died from political assassination in the past at Kent State, Malcolm X, JFK, RFK, Matthew Shepard, of course. So many have died. This is time, I think, for us to put things in context. We're very happy to be joined by Dr. Howard Schwamer, political scientist, professor emeritus from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you.
Let's just take a minute here. We had estimates of somewhere in the ballpark of like 6+ million people out in the streets protesting in the No Kings rallies. This weekend we had a bizarre, that's the only word I can come up with, army birthday celebration parade, which was bizarre. We had Senator Luis Padilla taken down by federal law enforcement and handcuffed, though released last week. We've now had political assassinations and a guy who had a hit list that was extraordinarily long. We've got the federalized National Guard, deployment of active duty Marines to LA, a president threatening to send them to other Democrat cities. Kristi Noem last week, I didn't talk about this specifically, said, "We're here to liberate the city from socialists and the burdensome leadership of this governor and mayor have placed on this country, city and state, and what they have tried to insert into the city." Professor, where are we in sort of the arc of, are we teetering on the edge of some major, even bigger political fracture? Help us understand this moment.
Yes and no. First of all, I apologize for being late. So I think it's really important. When Kristi Noem says something like that, or when, I mean, so many statements, and your last caller was just right on about the remark, I mean, even by the standards of today, the remarkable lying that was engaged in response to these assassinations in Minnesota right off the bat, Senator Lee of Utah saying this is what, you know, something with a Marxist. This is what happens when Marxists don't get their way. In order to understand what's going on here, I think you have to recognize that none of those messages are aimed at the people they're about. Noem doesn't believe the people of Los Angeles will turn around tomorrow and say, "Oh my gosh, we hadn't realized we were being ruled by socialists. Now we realize it. Thank heavens the army is here." They're aimed at supporters in Kentucky and Alabama and West Virginia. They're aimed at the base, and they're aimed at reinforcing the base's, you know, version of reality where all the blue states are overrun, are crime-ridden hellholes, overrun by socialists, and thank goodness Trump is saving us all from them and themselves, and them from themselves. And the purpose of it is to rile up the base and keep hold of it. And the political calculation is that you can maintain control, maintain power that way. I don't think you can. And there's at least a couple of reasons. One, consistently, Trump has always overestimated his own support. Whether it was the way he describes his election as a landslide, when it was not, you know, he did have the votes of 77 million Americans, but 75 million Americans voted against him. And somehow they go unremarked, you know, in this conversation. I don't think you can keep the images from bleeding through. We live in a video age, and the empty stands in Washington, D.C., and the giant crowds in cities across the country, these are visual images that get people's attention. So I think you have a situation where in really hardcore MAGA geographic areas, people are saying, well, thank heavens they're not coming. Right, you'll notice Trump announced immigration raids in blue cities and states. So, well, thank heavens they're not coming across after the workers in my state because they're good guys. They're going after the criminals in California and Michigan and Wisconsin. And it doesn't matter if that's nonsense. The people in Michigan and Wisconsin and California will know that, right? But the people in the Bay States can imagine only bad guys are being targeted. But that breaks down. And that breaks down when people find their businesses suddenly without workers or people they've known for years and years being deported. And it breaks down when Trump announces things like, well, we're going to stop raiding farms because the farmers tell me they need the workers. I don't think an illusion can be maintained indefinitely. And more I'm hearing, I'm sorry to use such a loaded term, but the outright lying becoming more and more extreme. And the problem is the more, for them, the more and more extreme the lying becomes, the harder it is to get away with. If you say demonstrably false things and those things are demonstrated to be false, that's a problem. And in the age of the internet, you know, people in red states as well as blue states will occasionally go to the internet and say, well, what do we know about this suspect, right? And it turns out he's a strong Trump supporter, which is the case, who as a minister was a staunchly pro-life, socially very conservative figure. That contradicts the narrative. So there's sort of a hint of desperation here. In the extremity of the narrative, but the explanation, I think, is that it's not aimed at the nation as a whole. It's not aimed at us. It's aimed at the base, whom Trump and his supporters believe are credulous enough to accept it. And I'm not sure that calculation will hold true for very much longer.
Let me ask you, Professor Schwaber, about the role of media. Much of the debate and discussion this afternoon has been over rhetoric and responsibility. And one of the things that before I became a member of the media, and even today, every day, I think about this, do I say exactly what I think and exactly the way I think it? Or do I need to temper that to try to create an opportunity for others to engage with the information, right? Sure. And one of the questions, and this is put very well by one of our listeners in a text message, Professor, so I'm going to read this. Many in the media have for decades approached these issues with almost feigned or invented balance, if you will. A lot of both-siderisms is to blame here because it absolves the media from being perceived as judging one side over the other. Many in the media did this believing it was fair, believing it was the reasonable approach. But after January 6th and now pardons of January 6ers, political assassination, this is not a both sides issue and media needs to get off the fence. Your thoughts on the role of media in the moment?
Sure. Actually, I'm going to talk about three things, if I may.
Please.
So first, the media. Look, it is, you all have an extraordinarily challenging task. You want to be fair. You want to be accurate. You don't want to simply say your opinions. I mean, it depends if you count yourself as an editorialist or a journalist, right? Those are two different roles.
Yes.
Those, the line between them gets blurred all the time. But I like to point to the Wall Street Journal, whose news coverage is absolutely outstanding, as whose editorial page I often find asinine. And I think people with different views from mine can say the same thing with the New York Times. You might find the editorial page appalling, but their news reporting is first rate. And the same is true of the LA Times and any other major paper. So on the one hand, there is a question of journalistic ethics. On the other hand, being fair doesn't go to the point of allowing yourself to be a platform for falsehood. Right?
Mm. But I want to raise let's take a quick pause there, Professor. We're going to come back on the other side, get to Professor Schwaber's two additional thoughts on the role of the media in this moment. We continue this great discussion when we come back. My name is Maggie Dawn. I've got Matt Rothschild with us and Professor Howard Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of Political Science from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Stick with us. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Yep. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber of the Political Science Department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Of course, my Monday guest co-host, Matt Rothschild, host of the podcast Wisconsin Forward. Let's get right back to it, Professor Schwaber. Sure. I was asking you about the media in this moment. And you had 3 points. If you can briefly encapsulate your first point, and then you were going to extrapolate some new concepts for us. Go right ahead.
So the first point is that, as I mentioned, the ethical challenge for media is very, very difficult. How to be fair and not editorial when you're news reporting in the face of misinformation. And that's a clear problem, and there's no easy answer. The second point is that media is a business, and a lot of what your caller called both-siderism is imposed by the owners of the media outlets who want to maximize their markets. One way to maximize a market is to choose a political voice and amplify it. The other way is to try and appeal to all sides. And that's a dynamic that gets in the way. In both those situations, the crucial imperative is that the media not allow itself to be used as a platform for misinformation, regardless of the justification, you know, as essentially part of a conspiracy. And people are very canny and very deliberate, as your callers have suggested, about using the media in just that way. Get the rumor out there, get the narrative out there, and you can close off the space for dialogue. But there's a third thing I wanted to bring up. There's a term that people in security studies like have started to use lately called stochastic terrorism. And yes, it's an internet thing. It used to be if you wanted to get a terrorist to blow up a bridge, you had to recruit them and pay them and train them and transport them. It's expensive and difficult. Not anymore. The stochastic version is to send the right kind of provocative message out into the ether by virtue of the internet, and out of 10 million people who see it, one will respond. And that's the form of violence that we're seeing now, and it's not new. It is a technique pioneered by the anti-abortion movement 20-some years ago. But the growth of the internet has made it infinitely more powerful. And so these narratives, there's an old word, incitement. But the problem is our speech categories don't work very well anymore, because when you say something on the internet, it's there forever, right? So it's not just someone who hears it this second, but the person might respond to it immediately. So I could say something now that a year from now someone will hear and respond to on the spot. And if one out of 10 million people responds to that with an act of violence, I have succeeded at no cost to myself in creating an act of terrorist violence. And that's at least part of what we're seeing going on here.
You will be assured, Professor Schwaber, or perhaps reassured to know that, one, I have used the term stochastic terrorism on this show, and two, just a few minutes before you joined us, I said part of the question of ultimate and perhaps intended responsibility here is Donald Trump says a volume of patently, as you put it, demonstrably false, inflammatory, incendiary things. He says them at a volume. He says them at a volume over a sustained period of time. And when you're saying that to hundreds of millions of people, that the statistical realities of that are very real. That's the, quote, stochastic idea behind stochastic terrorism. I believe my colleague Matt has a question or comment for you.
Well, first, a comment, then a question. Trump is still inciting people. I mean, just in the last 24 hours, he said these radical left Democrats are sick of mind, hate our country, and actually want to destroy our inner cities. And they are even threatening members of ICE. I mean, and so, you know, this goes out to millions and millions of his followers. It's very dangerous at this moment. The question I have is, before the break, you were talking about Trump getting more and more desperate because his lies are becoming obvious to people. But what happens when he gets more desperate? That's the question I have.
Well, I think we're seeing it. He gets more violent. And by the way, I'm not sure that Trump personally is feeling any sense of desperation, because I'm genuinely not sure how in touch with reality he is. But the people around him are aware that. So, look, there's a conflict within MAGA supporters about the support for Israel's attack on Iran. There's a conflict among the supporters over the issues, various issues involved in the budget bill, right? So there, it was never a singular movement. It was always a cobbled, like all movements, a cobbled together movement of different interests, and some of them are pulling apart. So, you know, there's a reason for the people who are in charge of strategy to be feeling a little bit desperate. I think the response is, and I think we see from people like Noam, in particular, as well as Trump himself, is to become more inciting, is to become more violent and speak more hatefully, because you want to drown out the doubts. You know, if you fear that your cause is beginning to be doubted, double down. Double down and make it more extreme and rally the troops around fear. That's the literal definition of demagoguery, and I think it's beyond peradventure. It is what we are seeing in the White House today.
Yeah, folks, and that's what's scary to me.
Yes, indeed. Folks, that's Professor Harold Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of Political Science from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, making us all a little smarter this afternoon. How do we move forward? What should people do if they are concerned about the moment that we're in, Professor?
Well, I think we're seeing it. And I'll go back to my initial comment, which is a very commonplace observation, a variation on it, that, you know, the whole two worlds, we live in different realities. Trump and his people are speaking to their base. I don't think they think for a minute the people of Los Angeles are being fooled. So the rest of us have to not be fooled. We have to protest peacefully. Trump wants violence. He wants it very badly. Nothing could help Trump more than something like the kind of violence we saw only occasionally, but we did see it during the Black Lives Matter protests of a few years ago. And I mean, I hate to be unbelievably boring about this, but in 2026, vote.
From Professor Schwaber's lips to your ears and the great divine, if you believe in that sort of thing, vote. Take to the streets. Make your voice heard. Do so peacefully. Do so with your vote and your voice, and never through violence. Thank you, Professor Matt Rothschild. My great thanks to you, my friend. I appreciate it. Everybody, that's going to do it for me this afternoon. I'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk about those No Kings rallies. How many people were there? What exactly went down, as well as Trump's bizarro army parade? All coming up tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.